All right. Hello and welcome back. This is Colin Keeley here.
And I'm Brent Sanders.
And we are two guys buying and building wonderful internet companies.
Yeah. And we haven't recorded in a while. So we want to kind of give a recap as to what's been going on with us, what's been going on, you know, in the world of I guess we want to call it indie acquisitions. Recently, I came down to Austin from Cleveland and visited Colin, which was a blast. I got to say, your neighborhood's is really, really cool. And just in general, Austin seems like a great place to raise a family.
Yeah, we've had the weirdest visitor experiences. So my dad came in the winter and it was like 17 degrees when he flew out. So he walked away thinking Austin's like the coldest place ever. And then you came, you walked through the neighborhood. It's really nice normally. And then, you know, we had this, you know, axe murder on the loose on the street. And we had the
That was intense. that was kind of crazy. So do we want to tell that story?
It's
notable.
They still haven't caught the guy, to my knowledge, which is wild. I've learned a lot more about the police since then.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny. We're just hanging out on your back deck, which is, I found that's like your office. That's what you do, which it's like, great. It's perfect weather, fresh air, sunshine, sunlight, all that stuff. And, you know, you heard it. I heard like a booming. I knew there was a job site or something going on across the street. So I didn't really think twice, but you were watching. I guess you saw this guy was breaking into a car.
Yes, we were hanging out on the back porch and we heard a big crash like around the side. And so I just walked around the side of the house and this guy was throwing a huge rock at a work guy's pickup truck. And I yelled at him and he stopped and he kept walking away. And then he came right back and he threw it like 10 more times, tried to break through his window, and eventually it shattered, which, you know, kudos to, I guess, like Ford pickup truck windows. I was shocked how long that thing lasted. But yeah, then he broke in the car and he was like, I guess, trying to steal it or something. He was in there for a long time rummaging around. And we called 911 and eventually he got out of the car with like probably 8-inch knife. And then I said that on 911 and eventually they're like, oh, okay, we'll actually send someone now, I think, was the response from their end, because I don't think they cared about someone breaking into a car.
Property damage is not quite on their we're going to send cars. But yeah, Once you said he had a weapon and he was like gorked out, he was not responding. He's not responding to you, but he also just looked, you know, glazed out, kind of cracked out. And he definitely, so the guys in the job site came out and they like pinned him in, right? Like before he got out of the car, they had another truck and they kind of pinned it in. They got kind of freaked out from that. They were like, this guy is like not, he's not here. Like he's not responding. He's not like a normal person.
Yeah. And so this guy eventually got out of the car, walked down the block. I think he's bleeding. So it's like blood all over the truck and broke into a house. And then a like hysterical girl came running out of the house. And eventually it was like 20 to 25 minutes later, the cops showed up in force. They had like 10 vehicles and like the whole SWAT gear set up and huge guns. And they surrounded the house and then they confirmed with everyone else there's no one else in the house. They eventually went into the house and they found out he wasn't in the house. He had somehow escaped out the back before the cops had arrived.
Yeah.
Which is, wild. It took them so long to show up. And then to my knowledge, they haven't, caught him or anything either after that.
But the freaky part, especially what freaked out the girl who lived in the building who got broken into, is that they suspected this guy that he had like murdered somebody like a week before or something like that.
Yeah, that's what they said. I don't know if there's any truth to that. Austin is not Chicago, so it's not like there's a murder, every day here. So that would be a pretty big news story. But yeah, that's what she said.
Well, I thought your neighborhood was...
But yeah,
was
this, it is. I mean, it's beautiful old homes on like, tree-lined streets in one of the nicer neighborhoods like in Austin. But yeah, it's funny. It got interrupted with that.
Yeah.
But the largest story here with cops, I was talking to a friend that has lived here for a number of years, is back in the riots of like 2020 at that time, they defunded the police.
Okay.
And so they cut the budget back dramatically. It was like a third or more. And they fired a bunch of cops. Maybe it was two thirds. It's something absurd. And then that got overturned just a year later. But that made this like enormous hole in the police workforce because they got rid of so many people. And now it's like, I don't know, a decade long backlog of like staffing issues to try to get staffed up again. So apparently if you call 911, like unless, you've just been shot, it doesn't seem like you're going to get anyone that soon.
Yeah. I just figured everyone had a gun in Texas, but I guess not always the case in Austin. I always thought it was like the most dangerous place to be a criminal. That was just my recollection, because they're just cowboys with guns being carried at all times. But I mean, and by the way, like, I'm not advocating you should have shot this guy, or we should have shot this guy. I mean, unless he was like coming for you, but like at the end of the day, you know, the knife was gnarly. That for sure was like, okay, I'm not going over there. Like, it's a car. And yeah, I don't think anybody needs to be shot over breaking into a car. That being said, he was whacked out. But hey, the food, I got to say, the best thing about Austin. So I, on your recommendation, even on the way out at the airport, I got some breakfast tacos at, what was it? Taco Deli? Was that it?
Taco Deli is, yeah, fantastic airport food.
Oh my God. Like, airport food, everything I ate was phenomenal. The barbecue was, that was a great culinary trip. I could easily gain 20 pounds moving to Austin.
It's dangerous. Yeah. It's warm here though, so you can't wear very many clothes, and then that keeps you in shape.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it was a great trip. It was good to, it does seem like there's a much more vibrant investor community for what we do versus Chicago, I would say, like, you know, at least my experience with it. I mean, it's funny. We kind of got into this both as we both left Chicago, like COVID was going on, and, you know, there's a bit of a gap, I guess, in our networking abilities during COVID, but we were able to meet with some cool people, and, you know, it just seems to be a little bit more of a community, definitely larger tech community for sure.
Yeah, it's been super fun. This is a big entrepreneurial community that I get to meet up with periodically, but yeah, eventful trip for you. I'll have you back, I'm sure. What else did you want to cover here?
Let's talk about Jules. So this is something that when I catch up with people, they're like, hey, how are things going? How's Vern going? What's this Jules thing that you guys are working on? I'm like, you know, I don't really work on it. It's more Colin's thing. So yeah, I figured that would be a good topic to introduce to our audience.
Yeah. So Jules is a, you know, Latin American recruiting and staffing firm that I launched. I don't know if I ever told you this story before, but I wanted to do this back when we were at Builders, and I actually launched it as like a type form. And I got, I think, like 3 clients that signed up from it. And I talked to our GP, Paul, about it. And he's like, oh, you got all these people issues. There's so much competition. Like, I don't really like that idea. And I was like, huh, okay. Maybe I shouldn't do it. And I just refunded people and I shut it down. And that was like, you know, 3 years ago. And then, or maybe it's more than 3 years ago at this point. But then COVID hit and all of these like outsourcing agencies rocketed upwards. So I've been noodling on this idea and I was basically led astray. But so yeah, I returned to it. It's going great. So I don't really, or really have never worked on it more than like a few hours a week. So I set up the landing page on Webflow. I had some recruiters, which I had used for recruiting for other things. Because our background is like, we were using the other agencies and it was costing us a fortune. And I was like, at some point, we should just like launch our own one of these. And so I returned to it, hired a recruiter, got some clients, and then it was kind of off to the races. And so they were fulfilling. And then I took a number of sales meetings, hired a great sales guy who like basically runs everything now. Mm-hmm. And he collaborates with the recruiters, and he is an assistant, and he's like my assistant. And so, yeah, it's just been scaling up. It's, you know, it's going great and growing quickly.
Cool. What, like, what's the typical, is it salespeople mostly? What's the typical hire that you're placing?
The most common are like SDRs, so sales folks. And they're like 1,000 to 1,500 a month. They're really, really good. And then I'd say virtual assistants or marketing assistants are probably next most popular.
Sure.
And then after that is like graphic designers and bookkeepers are up there. Hmm. And more recently, we started getting way more technical roles. So like full stack developers, Shopify developers, and we're bringing on a recruiter just to like focus on that, you know, especially.
Cool. I mean, in terms of like where this fits in your plate, like it sounds like it's largely managed by the person who's running it. I mean, how involved are you?
Not terribly. Yeah, at this point, it's more like working on the business periodically. Like if I ever get asked to do anything, I just try to shuffle it to the next person. Someone had this phrase of like, every one of your employees has the ability to throw a monkey on your back. And as long as you take things, like you have a bunch of monkeys on your back. And so anytime they try to throw something to you, you're supposed to throw the monkey back to them or like throw it to someone else. So you're never holding any monkeys.
Got it. Okay. I mean, it's it's kind of begs the question, what, well, I mean, you promote it though. Like there's work that you do there, right? Like that, I guess, you know, if you were this entrepreneurial person that's sort of running it, you know, what's stopping him from just launching his own enterprise, right? It's, there is some connection maybe that you have to an audience or like a US-based audience that, you know, drives that.
Yeah. So that's the biggest part for sure. I just kind of skipped over getting customers and how it grew so quickly. It's 100% that I've, you know, for years I've written online and have this huge like email newsletter base. And all I did was I have a bunch of automations already. So if you sign up, you get like a bunch of emails for different email courses or different, you know, things around different topics. And so all I did was inserted Jules there, like periodically, almost like a sponsor, like I'm sponsoring my own newsletter.
Sure.
And so out the gates, it was the majority were friends. And then it was like just friends and followers. And now it's starting to get in referrals.
Great.
So yeah, 100%. It's like a complete unfair advantage to have, you know, thousands of people that are small business owners following you.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, that's exciting.
Me, right. So it's like the trust is built up over years.
And that's exciting. I mean, it is, I know you've always had an interest in this like remote worker sort of VA, and we've definitely like progressed and leveled up our skills around hiring and retaining. I mean, I think we have probably the longest stretch now of VA, not VAs, but just like remote workers all over the world. And I think back to when we started this podcast, we started talking about this, like, hey, we're interested in trying it. And I think we cycled through, I'd like to think probably 4 to 5 roles now that I think about it, 4 to 5 different people in the same role. I mean to say, over the years, but over the last 2 years, really, I don't really know what the main change was other than, you know, us kind of understanding what the environment was like and screening better, but really like retention has gotten significantly better.
Yeah. I'd say we have a lot more processes in place. I think we've both been reading more books like Scaling People and EOS on kind of these topics. Mm-hmm. What do you think we're doing differently that, you know, it seems like all our employees are rather happy with us?
I think we're paying a little bit more, not like a lot more, but at least for like the Filipino and South American roles, I think we pay a little bit more than like markets. We do get access to a little bit better candidates. I think experienced people that we've done reference checks on, that's another thing. Like I think our current roster, it's everybody who came highly recommended or had, you know, prior role. And then, yeah, I guess the Reddit, I mean, I do a fair amount of time. I spend a little bit of time. I wouldn't say a fair amount of time. I do a one-on-one with everybody every month. Right. And that has certainly helped. I wasn't doing that before just because it was kind of weird, but you know, I think all of those factors kind of, as well as expectations have been set a little bit better. I think we've been a little bit more verbose of like what's acceptable, what's not. Yeah. I don't know. It's hard as I think about it now. I think it's a blend of a whole bunch of stuff, and it's giving people, if I had to boil it down, probably giving people more ownership of like, you know, over time, getting them up to speed and then saying, hey, you are in charge of this metric and own it. Like you are the only one in charge of it. And that's definitely seen the best results in my mind.
Yeah. I think we've got a lot better at it. You could probably put the pillars out there of like what we're doing, but I think we do the ownership. That's a big thing. I think the work is interesting. The work is probably far more interesting than being a cog at like, you know, a much larger company, which is what alternative is for a lot of these people. We pay, you know, I would say above average for sure in all these countries. That's something we do at Jules too. We recommend people like the retention is just way higher if they're just getting paid like 10 to 20% more than they would get otherwise. Or else like the people that are looking for jobs are like, oh, I'm doing so much work. I'm underpaid. And it's just easy to steal those people away. Yeah, those are probably the biggest things. Autonomy, we're not like super micromanaging anyone, you know, to any real extent.
I agree.
Do you want to talk about any Scout stuff?
Yeah. So since the last time we recorded, I think we last update there was that we're going to dive into services. And as of right now, what's first week of April, we have, what, 2 branded app customizations already underway or signed. That's actually an update I didn't share with you, but we do have commitments from folks that are like, great, send the contract, I'm in, charge my credit card, let's go. And then we have one growth engagement sort of pilot that's already underway. So like, you know, in a very micro level, what we want to do is kind of start small with this and flesh it out. We're seeing a lot of progress there. And I would say, like, I would attribute it to, we talked about it on a prior podcast, but this book, Monetizing Innovation. And I don't think you need to read the whole book, but I think there's a podcast that, you know, maybe this podcast, but there's a podcast that the author was on, but it really, really enabled me. I was really struggling with, like, I get on a call with somebody, they want to do something custom. How do you talk about it? Of like, hey, what you're asking for probably could be 10,000, could be 50,000, and you probably want to pay 1500. Like, how do you have those conversations and bridge the gap? Because there is an element to all of the, at least on the tech side, the engagements where I'm like, okay, we're going to build some stuff to support this, but really you're getting like a custom thing, and like who pays for what and how. And that book has been just gold to arm me with, like arm yourself with really clear, poignant questions that are like, what's this worth to you? How much would you pay for it? What's too much money for this? Like, where does it, and none of those answers have elicited a quantitative response where it's like 5,000 is too much, 2,000 is too little. Like, it's been hemming and hawing about answering the questions like, well, you know, this is a nice to have, but it would be great for customer experience. In order to, in the customer's own language, like, tell me, where does this fit in their priorities? And then I can, you know, because they're already customers, I can look at what the revenue is, and they'll even tell me, this is what I charge. And it's really easy to say, okay, there's an incremental 20-30% that you could charge to a customer to have a great experience. And therefore, you know, a branded app that has some special customization makes sense. So I think Monetizing Innovation, if you haven't read it and you're in this world where you have a SaaS product and you're thinking about productizing some services, definitely read it, or at least listen to the podcast or skim it. I'm not sure which one's best, but yeah, I don't think I actually finished the book because it's a lot of case studies, but the core of it was great. So the first half is definitely worth reading.
Yeah. It's funny. You didn't get quantifiable answers. I got very specific answers to these questions.
Oh, really?
Which I think are gold. Yeah. The, what do you think is an acceptable price? What do you think is an expensive price? What's a prohibitively expensive price?
Yeah.
And then, you know, would you buy this at, you know, this price? Something specific. Yeah. In my customer calls, maybe I'm a more blunt, you know, question asker. I just let them sit in it until they give me an answer. But yeah, I got real numbers, and that's how we, you know, arrived at the price effectively for our first engagement.
Great. Yeah. So like the goal is bang out the first couple and then pilot them, or, and then promote the results as testimonials. And I think there's like a great way to obviously grow all the ancillary services, but just overall MRR, you can multiply MRR is kind of what we're expecting to do, and we'll see how it goes, but so far so good. And I think the other thing that I'm really looking into is seeing like what we can do to really dive into the boarding space. I mean, you've brought this up of like moving up market a little bit. Specifically, like, boarders have a lease, boarders have generally larger businesses, and there are some venture players that are just getting into the space. There was a company called Goose you raised to me that raised about, I think, 8 million in their most recent round or in total. But, you know, I look at that product and I'm like, well, we have all that stuff, but they have like an iPad and like a check-in app. And so I feel like Scout already has some of the very difficult parts of pet care, like walking and GPS and media and all this stuff to facilitate like a Wag or Rover-like experience. And we can kind of take a step sideways to support boarding. So I've kind of started prototyping a couple of things. You know, we really don't need to go crazy to support these things. And I think one of the things that would be worth doing, and I don't know if it's whether this is like something we pilot or we find a design partner similar to what Monetizing Innovation recommends, but building an iPad app that has a point of sale integration. Like, I feel like that's a very simple thing to turn something that's like just an app into something that like you can mount at a front desk at a boarding office or a boarding facility. And all of a sudden you have, you know, a whole different channel or a whole different segment.
Yeah. I love this. This kind of came from client discussions to some extent of like, the successful dog walkers generally do pet sitting as well. And that's like in their homes or in other people's homes. And then the natural progression from that is like, well, we should just have like a retail facility to do it.
Yeah.
So they're kind of moving up market and more of them are requiring some version of this. And it's just, it's a way stickier customer. It goes back to, we talked about it before a little bit, but like the customers that are irate about paying $25, $50 a month and just running away from those people, you know, as quickly as possible.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we have a great product for those people, for the 1, 2, 3, 4 person dog walking companies. But, you know, the people that we are like probably speaking the most with are these larger companies where they have a fleet. And it very quickly goes into grooming, it goes into training. And it's like, we can do that. And I think now it also speaks to, I mean, we're 18 months into the acquisition now. And it's like, I think the reality is I feel comfortable with all the different parts of the code now. It's really taken this long to like understand how everything works. Like you have to almost break it a fair amount or see it break a fair amount to see then how to fix it. And then, okay, where could we tailor this experience? Like, you know, our walks all have the same services, right? There's pee, poop, and water on every single meeting. So like, if you're doing training, that's not relevant. If you're doing boarding, that's not really, they're going to pee, poop, and water all day long. It's like knowing how to kind of, but everybody uses appointments. Everybody uses invoices, payments. And so there's parts of the domain that you can still use. And, you know, now that we've gotten intimate with all the touch points, I think it's an appropriate time to start digging into, okay, well, what would this look like to have sort of like a, you know, more of a facility-based approach? And by the way, like what could we do that's unique that leverages our existing infrastructure, such as, you know, a daily update? You know, I don't know much about some of the competitors, but I do know that the hardest part of what we do is related to walking and related to these real-time updates. And if we can leverage that and come, you know, kind of backwards a little bit on the easy stuff of like, hey, make it so you can have a multiple day appointment, right? Like that's not supported currently, but that's a pretty easy thing to say, hey, it's going to be a 3-night stay and you're going to get updates and other stuff that's kind of more unique to Scout as part of it to set us apart, frankly, which I think will be very interesting to see how that shakes out.
Nice. Yeah, I'm excited for that. There's a big dominant player that seems to be getting attacked more from all sides, because I think their prices are really high and now it's a little outdated because it's been around for like a decade or more. So it's an exciting spot.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Anything else you wanted to chat through? Any other updates?
A funny one is, so I got a ice cream maker that we've been using like every other day. I don't know if you've seen this in like it's really popular in the fitness community because you can make effectively a protein shake. It's just like milk and protein powder. And freeze it, and then it makes this like glorious ice cream. And so the backstory here is that professional kitchens use a $7,000 PacoJet to make ice cream, and people are obsessed with it. It's a great device, but their patent ran out recently. So Ninja, this company, copied it, and they sell it for $200. And it's huge, and it's a really nice ice cream maker. So $200 instead of $7,000. So yeah, we've been doing, you know, protein ice cream every night. And so like a jar of ice cream is like 50 grams of protein. And the like macros around it are wild.
Oh my God. That's awesome. So you're getting swole off ice cream is what you're saying.
Yeah. And so is everyone else. These things are super popular. I tweeted about it. It was liked. This is my most popular tweet in like a year, which is kind of funny. It's on ice cream. I think likes and bookmarks combined are like 9,000. And then over 1 million views, like 1.3 million. I think I sold like 100 Ninja Creamies from it because people are asking for it. And I put a, you know, Amazon link below with my recipes and stuff. But yeah.
Do you get an affiliate link or anything?
I think you make like $10 per, you know, device sale.
Wow.
So yeah, made a little bit from it.
Nice.
Yeah, it's funny.
Internet to work.
All my most popular tweets are like health related. It's like this niche business acquisition stuff. No one cares, but you tweet about, you know, Brian Johnson and it's like 10,000 likes, something crazy.
That's funny.
Anything else new over there?
I could tell you. So I was basically initiated into one of the coolest things in Cleveland. And I don't know if I'm able to speak about it publicly per se, but there's this spot in Cleveland that's essentially like an old world, like European bathhouse, essentially a Russian bath, like a banya. right? It's called the Cleveland Schwitz, appropriately named. So I got invited. So I moved here, what, 3 years ago, and I heard about it through the grapevine. And if you look it up on Google, it says it's closed. It's not open, but you hear rumblings from people that have been, and they tell you, you know, it's an old world, exactly like giant sauna, cold plunge. I finally got invited. A friend texted me last week and they're like, hey, do you want to go to the Schwitz? Immediately respond, yes. You know, there was a whole bunch of other information, but I was just like, yeah, I'm there. I don't care when. I'll make time for it. So the Schwitz is in a pretty rough neighborhood in Cleveland. You turn down sort of an alleyway and there's just like no markings, no signs, no nothing. You pull in and there's like a parking lot that's, you know, there's an attendant there and you park your car, walk in. You got to schmear the guy, which begins, you know, it's a cash only thing. You schmear the guy, give him, you know, $20 to watch the car. You go into this building. It looks just like completely dilapidated. You open the door. It kind of smells like a bowling alley, like the tinge of tobacco smoke a little bit. You walk up and essentially you have to give someone's name. So I came to find out all you have to do is you have to go there and, like, you know, get the name of the guy who runs it. And so it's a seasonal business. It's not open in the summer. And it's really, it's kind of like a speakeasy vibe, right? So you text them, maybe they have an opening, maybe not. You make a reservation. So you fork over some cash. He takes your order for your steak, which I wasn't really aware of. What do you want on your steak? I just said everything. That's my style, medium rare. Go get changed, go downstairs, and they have the biggest sauna I've ever been in, right? And so it's a huge, but, you know, for people that have been to more of like public bath, this is probably, you know, not all that huge, but 6-level benches that go up. And at the highest level of the sauna, it's like 220 degrees. It's basically a room where it's split down the middle. One side of the room is the oven, essentially, which they filled with rocks, just mass. And it seems like they turn on the oven before they open and then it's off for the rest of the day. And the heat is just in there with the rocks. And so it's about 220 on top. At the bottom, probably about 100. So you go between that, and then there's like a cold plunge pool, which was ice cold water. It was great. And that was like a huge, you know, 10 foot by 20 foot cold plunge. By far the best, you know, like body experience I've had. And I used to have a sauna in my house. It was great. So I'm super into this, by the way. But the part that no other place that I've been to was going back upstairs. So we're probably downstairs for about an hour and a half, going between the sauna and the cold plunge and just feeling amazing. Go upstairs and essentially it's a restaurant and you're served your steak, which I didn't quite know what to expect, but on the table are, you know, cheese, bread, whatever. There's a fridge. It's unlimited drinks, whatever you want, beer. People bring wine and whiskey. People are playing cards, smoking cigars. And this is the part that I was like, my mind was blown. It was like an old world men's club. You can smoke inside, you know, there's a fan going, so you're not just stinking. Not that I smoke, but I definitely tried to, you know, had a cigar, chatted, played, you know, and everyone's in their towel, which is the funniest part. So people are continually going up and down. I'm not really one for drinking and going in a sauna, but still people kind of, you know, come up, have a drink, have something to eat, go back down. And then they serve this meal, which was just the biggest steak I've ever had in my life. It was, I think, like a 32-ounce bone-in ribeye with just completely coated on top with sauteed garlic and peppers and potatoes. And that was basically the meal. And by the end of it, I walked out of there feeling like a whole new person, which was probably the coolest thing I've ever done in Cleveland and is very unique to the area. I don't think there's a lot of these places all over the country, but I was able to talk to the owner and I was able to get his card, and now he, according to him, I'm a card carrying member. So I'm hoping to go back soon and experience it again.
So I love this. Like, are you going to go back weekly or monthly, or, you know, whenever someone visits you, you bring them? Like, what's your
plan? Yeah, it's, I think it's a special occasion. I definitely want to bring my dad. I'm going back this weekend. My cousin's coming in town, and this is right up his alley. Like, we would go Schwitz, and we would say that, oh, let's go Schwitz. Like, it's such an old Jewish man thing. It's funny, right? It's like, but that's what we say. And so it was ironic that this place is called that, but that is what it is. That's what the word means. So I guess it's not ironic. But yeah, it's not an every weekend thing. I think it's expensive, right? You're paying for this meal, and you got to be out by 8:30, by the way. Like, you can get there around 2, I believe, and then they kick you out because you can just tell people will linger, right? They eat and they start drinking, and there were people playing cards, smoking cigars. It was hilarious. So I'd say, yeah, probably more of like a special occasion kind of thing. I definitely want to take my dad, my cousin, I'm going to take anybody else who comes in town. This is by far the coolest thing I've ever done in Cleveland. And definitely there is a certain thing about living in Cleveland that I have to say that it's like, there's a certain level of like authenticity is the word I'm going to use, but like, it is a very unique place in that respect. And this place epitomizes that and is like, it's great. You walk out friends with, you know, 50 other people that you've been basically sitting half naked in a room with, you know, not just in the sauna, upstairs too. Everyone's wearing towels. It's hilarious. So very, very unique experience. And I would highly recommend it. Now, I don't know how to tell you to get in unless I know you. I'm not going to vouch for anybody and risk my chance of losing. But yeah, that I had to wait 3 years to get my invite. So, you know, it's super cool.
Who's like the average clientele there?
Oh man, there is no average. So from what I was told, I was there once. The day I was there, there was like a table of 20, like Case grad students, like younger, probably in their mid 20s. And then all the way to the spectrum of like the old man table that was, you know, just big guys that were, I didn't really speak much to them, but like everyone was very jovial, friendly. And everywhere in between, it was a lot of just like, you know, it was interesting. There were like, you could kind of, it was like lunch tables. You could kind of tell roughly. So there was like these educated kids that, and then there were some more blue collar guys and then older guys. Our table was kind of a mishmash. I didn't even know everybody at our table. I was like fourth hand invited because I told a friend of mine, like, if you ever hear about an invite, but you know, it was just kind of a smattering. It was all male. That was one thing. There is a co-ed night, I guess they do. And then they also have ladies' nights as well. I don't think it goes over as well with the steak and cigars with the ladies. I don't think that's as quite as popular as with the male crowd, but yeah, all walks of life. Every kind of person in Cleveland seems like they might know something about it and they go. So I'm definitely going back this weekend for the, you know, visitor coming in town. And I think it's the perfect way to show them. This is actually for the eclipse, perfect way to show them the eclipse. Cause you know, the eclipse in Cleveland is going to be cloudy. There's no way we are actually going to be able to see the sun in April in Ohio.
The eclipse is a big deal. I was looking at flights, like, you know, some of my family was looking at flying in for it. It's instead of like the usual price, it's $2,000 because everyone's coming to Austin for it. It's crazy.
It's probably a way better chance of actually seeing the eclipse and generally probably better food. Cleveland's got some good food, but it's not quite the, although I did notice about a block away from my office, some guy just rolled a smoker into a parking lot and it looks like he was smoking some stuff. So might have to try out the Cleveland smoke shop, whatever that is. It's going to be, we'll see how it rates against Austin.
There you go. Yeah. That's all I got. You want anything else?
No. The Schwitz story. That's very special to me.
Yeah, I love that. Hopefully you're not getting inundated with requests to join you now from all the Cleveland listeners.
Hey, if people are here, I mean, it is kind of like, it does seem like, you know, you hear about, I don't know, if you ever watched like Blues Brothers, it was like the old way of doing business, you know, of like you spend time with somebody, there's no clothes necessarily. So, you know, nobody's fronting, so to speak. And it's just, you see how they handle pressure, see how they handle being in a 220 degree oven with you. And yeah, it's more fun than golf. I'll say that as far as a networking and business activity, but yeah, I don't know. The cigar and drinking part of schwitzing has never been a thing for me. I've been more of like this is more like a health club type thing, but you know, it's Cleveland, so it's very fitting.
Yeah, it is an odd combo, but all right. I love that. Let's end on that.
That's all right, I got.
Take care, everyone.
All right.